ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय परिब्राह्मण विक्षेप हरिरं भाव
भाथनाय
उत्सर्पणा पसर्पणाय चन्योन्यं प्रत्यरुन्धतम् Each fighter contended with his opponent by dragging him about in circles, shoving and crushing him, throwing him down and running before and behind him. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word parirambha indicates crushing one's opponent with one's arms. Hare Krishna. I am most grateful to be among all of you today. Hare Krishna. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 44, entitled The Killing of Kamsa, Text 4. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches us, Yegatam mam prapadyante tam sthitaiva bhajamya, that according to how we approach him, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for that person I'm never lost, nor are they ever lost to me. Krishna expands through his energies in everything that exists. One who is forgetful of Krishna naturally thinks in terms of janasya moho yamaham mameti. I am this body, and all things in relation to the body are mine. Because the nature of the Atma, the soul, is ananda, blissful. So we're looking for that bliss. Existence means connecting with that happiness that is our nature. On the spiritual realm, we find ever increasing, never ending happiness in Krishna, who is all attractive, whose love is infinite, and who reveals his love according to our willingness to receive it. But when we forget that, we try to find it through material energy, because we're identifying with material energy. When we identify ourselves as eternal servants of Krishna, which is our eternal constitutional position, then we seek giving Krishna happiness, because that's the nature of love. Ahoitaki apratihata. Spiritual love is not motivated by any type of selfishness or egoism, and it cannot be interrupted by any situation. Love is to give ourselves totally for the pleasure of the beloved. Samsidhir Haditoshanam. Perfection of all of our duties is to whatever extent it pleases Krishna. That is the psychology of bhakti. There are many psychologies within this world. The psychology of bhakti is deep, profound, scientific. At the same time, its basis is very simple. That the actual goal, purpose, success of whatever we do, whoever we are, in whatever species or position we may be, is that Krishna is pleased. This consciousness is love. And as the Bhagavad explains, when you water the root of the tree, janmadhyasayata, then naturally that water goes to every part of the tree. So when our loving propensity is directed toward Krishna, then naturally we will actually perceive the opportunity to please Krishna in everything and everywhere and in everyone. When Krishna tells, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, that person is never lost to me. In bhakti, what is it that we're seeing? If we're looking for Krishna's threefold bending form playing his flute in a piece of plastic, we may not see it. We may imagine, but what are we really seeing? But we see Krishna by seeing the opportunity to please him through our service, through our love, in everything and in every situation. Mamaivam so jivaloke, jiva bhuta sanatana. Every living being is a part of Krishna. Aham bija pradapita. Everyone is Krishna's children. Sri Radha is the mother of everyone. And Sri Krishna the father. And everyone is a little part of Krishna. And even material energy, inanimate objects, it is all Krishna's energy. Krishna tells in the 10th chapter of Gita, I'm the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Prakriti, or this energy of material nature, is Krishna's. So therefore, when we see anything, whether it be a car or a piece of wood, we are thinking this is Krishna's property. And it's meant to be utilized for Krishna's pleasure. In this way, it's very practical, very accessible, very doable to actually see Krishna everywhere. By seeing, how can I please Krishna? In everything and in every situation. There may be tragedies. There may be celebrations in life. They will come like the winter and summer seasons, inevitably. Bhakti is not waiting for the perfect material situation to come before us. Sometimes Maya traps us that way. When the perfect material situation, when things are going the way I perceive it to be favorable, then I could really do something wonderful for Krishna. Then I could really flourish in my bhakti. When people are acting in ways that don't break my heart and cause me anxiety, when situations around me are more favorable toward actually getting something done, accomplishing, when my body and mind are cooperating
with what I want to do.
That type of devotional service is conditional. And as we cited from the Srimad Bhagavatam, bhakti is unconditional. Whether our mind is what it is, or whether our body is tired or distressed, or whether people are having, are praising us or causing us so much anxiety, whether it's a nice air-conditioned hall or it's burning hot in the heat of this Indian summer, whatever. We make progress by whatever the situation may be, how can I please Krishna? And there is no situation that can prevent us from thinking that way and acting accordingly. How can I please Krishna? That is the path of perfection. How favorable circumstances are really have nothing to do with our spiritual lives. How we see the favorable opportunity and potential in every situation is the path toward prema bhakti, or love for Krishna. We may have shortcomings. We may be old people thinking, why didn't I learn music when I was young? Then I could sing such nice kirtan. Why didn't I go to college and learn how to study? Then I could read the scriptures with some deep analysis. Why didn't I take better care of my health so I wouldn't have this wretched body of mine right now? Yes. If you think like that, then you're going to have to take another birth. And you're going to have to do it all over again. And the problem is, when you're young, you don't think that way. So you're going to have to take another birth just to do all the things that you wish you would have done. And when you're young, you're not going to think about it. And in your next birth, when you're old, you're going to start saying the same thing again. And take another birth. But it doesn't matter. Whatever we are right now, it's a perfect situation just to surrender. Krishna, I'm yours. That's all. When Lord Ram spoke to Sugriva, Hanuman, Angada about Vibhishan, he said, anyone who wants surrenders his heart or her heart by saying, Krishna or Ram, from this day I am yours, with sincerity. He says, that person, I vow before all of you, I become the property of that person. I will always protect that person. Even if Ravana, who made so many crazy mistakes, even if he came and said, my Lord, I'm yours, I would accept him. This is our hope. If we just chant the names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, with this sincerity, with this spirit, then even if we've done all the things that Jagai and Madai have done, if we're willing to just give it up and take a vow, Krishna, to this day I'm yours. But that doesn't mean just saying it. That means living it. When Ram is saying, my devotee or anyone says, my Lord, I am yours, that means I'm living according to what pleases you. Sarvataraman parityasya mamekam sharanam praja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishamimasa. Krishna tells, if one surrenders in this spirit, I shall deliver you from all the reactions of all the sins of your past and deliver you. Krishna gives himself to the devotee who gives their selves. This is the universal principle. It was especially demonstrated in Krishna's entering Mathura. Everyone was seeing Krishna according to their nature. And everyone was surrendering to Krishna according to their nature. We have discussed last week the washerman. He had done thousands and thousands of lifetimes of tapasya, austerities, yoga, religion, for the purpose of seeing God. And in reciprocation, now the supreme, original God of all gods came right to his shop. Can you imagine? People go on pilgrimage, so many places. Here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is coming right to your shop. And he's a washerman. He has all this cloth. He's dyeing the clothes and everything. And Krishna says, give to me some cloth. Because this is what love means. When Krishna wants to show his mercy, he gives us service. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, don't try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. So when Krishna really wants to bless us, he gives us the opportunity to serve. Because in that service, we actually learn how to love Krishna. Because we learn through so many histories, people see God sometimes, but they have no love. Hiranyaksha saw Varahadev, but there was no love. Hiranyakashipu saw Narasimhadev. Ravana saw Ram. Ravana had Sita, the pleasure potency of the Lord, living with him. But he was making no progress whatsoever. He was only making aparads because he didn't have a desire to serve, to please. He was seeing the Lord as an object for him. So when we come before the deity, that the deity is an object for me to see. The holy name is an object for me to relish. The Vaishnavas are objects for me to somehow or other get something from. Then we miss the real opportunity. Seva is the spirit behind everything in bhakti. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi ishnana amanina manadena kirasaniya sadahari. The spirit of service, humility. That we come before Krishna. Krishna, I've come to offer you my love, my service. What can I do for you? When we have this service spirit, when we chant the holy names, then Krishna really responds in his name. Because we want to please him, we want to love him, whether we taste or not taste. The only reason why we want to taste the sweetness of the holy name is because Krishna is pleased. It's not for our taste. The more we taste Krishna, the more there's love, so more Krishna is more pleased. The gopis dressed themselves very nicely, not so that they could look nice for themselves. They dressed nicely because it pleased Krishna. The gopis only wanted to be happy because they knew their happiness made Krishna happy. Otherwise, they didn't care anything for happiness.
Now this is bhakti. Samsudhir Hari Toshin. Hari steals our hearts. When we please Krishna, Krishna steals our hearts. When we give to Krishna, Krishna gives himself to us. Machchita madgata prana. When we take shelter of Krishna together and share Krishna by discussing him with one another and making plans to serve him together, united, that gives maximum pleasure to Krishna. This is Sankirtan. When we sit and chant, that's very nice. Haridas Thakur would sit and chant 300,000 names of Krishna a day, 192 rounds. But during the Rath Yatra in Puri, and during the kirtans at Srivasangam in Navadweep, and in so many other places, what a great joy when he was together with all the devotees, together, with one heart, with one mind, so many bodies. Some were from outcast communities, some were from Brahmin communities, some were in poverty, some were wealthy people, some were kings, some were just little clay cup makers. All castes, all divisions of society were there in Puri. With one heart, when they came together, because their purpose was what will give pleasure to Jagannath, to Krishna. And they chanted, Hare Krishna.
Hare.
So the washerman, the ultimate blessing, the opportunity to serve. And real service is not what I want, it's what Krishna wants. This is the difference between a neophyte devotee and a devotee who's really making progress. A devotee that's making progress is, Krishna, what pleases you? It's not about me, it's about what pleases you. Of course, we dovetail our propensities, but ultimately, how does it make you happy, Krishna? And that's a question in every moment of life. We can be reciprocating with Krishna through asking. So, washerman, Krishna came right to his door and said, this is what you do, you have cloth, give me this cloth. So nice. It's the same beautiful Krishna that everybody else, that the greatest lovers of the Lord is seeing. And he was angry because of his association with Kamsa. So instead of pleasing Krishna, he started saying terrible, terrible insults about Krishna. So he missed the chance. Sudama, he gave everything, and Krishna gave him everything. And as Krishna walked, he came upon a hunchbacked woman. Her name was Kubja. And Krishna saw her. She was bent down. Her limbs were deformed due to her hunched back. She was quite unsightly in that sense. She had a very nice face, but the rest of her body was really, really in a diseased condition from an orthopedic perspective. She was carrying the most fine fragrances and oils. It was so nice that Krishna actually smelled it and was attracted. And she came up to that lady. And Krishna revealed his own love to her through his smile, through his charm, through his glance, through his form. And while everybody in Mathura considered her really ugly, Krishna said, "Oh, beautiful lady, what is this that you're carrying?" And she explained that she was the servant of Kamsa. She introduced herself with the name Trivakra, which means one who's bent in three places. Not like Tribhanga. Krishna's bends are very beautiful, but Trivakra means hunchback bends. So she didn't think much of herself in that sense. And she said, "I'm servant of Kamsa, the king." And Kamsa, he loves the oils and the sandalwood mixtures and musk and aguru that I make for him. And that's why he likes me. He doesn't like anything else about me. Because Kamsa is very much in the mood of being an enjoyer. And if she was beautiful in form, Kamsa would like her for so many reasons. But Kamsa wanted, he would judge everybody and everything according to material, you know, how, what pleases me. So he liked nothing about this Trivakra except that she made the best oils, and he facilitated her by giving her so much opportunities. Now, understand, there was a big ceremony coming up. Krishna Balaram, the Brijbasis, were invited to the wrestling arena. And Kamsa had a big stadium created for this purpose. It's very beautiful. His ministers, his queens, the other provincial rulers from all around he invited, his generals, the most distinguished people, as well as the common people of Mathura, were all going to be present there. So this was one of the very highlight festivals he was conducting. And obviously he wanted to be his best in such a public assembly. So she made very, very special mixtures of fragrant oils and pulps for Kamsa on that day. And he was expecting them from her. And Kamsa was the type of person, he was a dictator, and a violent, cruel dictator. If you didn't do what he wants, then that was a simple problem for him to solve. He just ends your life immediately. And if he ends your life because you don't please him, that's the precedent. And everybody knows that if I don't please him, my life will be ended too. So Kupcha knew the sociology of Kamsa's Mathura. So here she was on her way to Kamsa's palace to give him these oils and these pulps for his pleasure. And Krishna, he said, "Give the best of the oils to me and my brother Balaram." Kupcha was so happy. She said that these oils are only meant for you and your friends. The two of you, Krishna Balaram, are so beautiful. You have captured my heart so much that these oils are your property. And for your pleasure, I will give you everything that you want. This
is the nature of her love. Very similar to the gopis. When Krishna played his flute under the Bamsiva tree on the bank of Yamuna, he was calling them for his pleasure. And ultimately the gopis, they didn't consider the consequences to themselves. They only thought, what will please Krishna? They understood that they could be rejected by the whole society, rejected by their families, rejected by everyone. But if pleases Krishna, so those things were not even something to consider in their mind. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the greatest of all renunciates, explained the personified ultimate essence of renunciation is the gopis. Many of them had husbands, they had babies, they had in-laws and everything else. They were living at home, but they were, their spirit of selfless love is the highest aspiration even for the greatest of yogis. And the Brahmins' wives, the yajnapatnis, they also, they weren't simple gopis. They were the wives of very, very powerful, austere Brahmins who were gurus of the society. When Krishna sent his little friends, please bring some food, they immediately left, even though everyone was saying, no, no, you cannot go, you cannot go, you will be condemned if you go. They went to the forest to offer their bhoga to Krishna. And in a similar way, this is not like some secret in the forest. This is right publicly in the streets of Mathura. People are watching, you know. The people of Mathura are there. They're seeing Kupcha, the ugly hunchbacked maidservant of Kamsa, is right when he's at home in his palace expecting the fragrances. She's going to give them not just to anybody, but to Kamsa's worst enemy. Kamsa sent Akrura to bring Krishna and Balaram for the specific, exclusive purpose of killing them. Kamsa hated Krishna. Kamsa was day and night thinking of Krishna with such total negativity. He was his enemy. Now, from a logical perspective, this is a serious insult. Yes? When something very, very valuable that is the property of the king, and he's waiting for it, and you're on your way, it's all prepared, and then you give it all away to his worst enemy. Jivakra understood all this. She knew what was going on. But like the gopis and like the Brahmins' wives, it wasn't about her. It was Samsidhir Hari Toshanam. Krishna, you are Hari. You stole my heart. Therefore, you stole everything about my life. It's all yours. Her only pleasure, her only goal in life was that Krishna just accepts it. So Krishna gave her,
Kubja gave Krishna and Balaram a quantity of Kamsa's favorite fragrances. She gave it all away. And Krishna was so happy. He started putting it on his body, and Balaram was putting it on his body, and she gave so much. They were putting it on the bodies of all the gopas, the friends with them. And oh, how it smelled so nice. And Krishna wanted everybody to see that Kubja gave all the oils and everything to that belonged to Kamsa. So he did it in a way that, because there were different colors, natural, organic colors. Even Kamsa would not stoop so low to chemical stuff. Krishna's complexion is dark like a monsoon cloud. So he took the different ointments and preparations of Kubja that were yellow in color, and he put it on his body. So it really could be seen, the contrast of yellow and blue. Yes, that way everyone could see. Kubja gave Kamsa's oils and sandals, and it's on Krishna. And Krishna's going to see Kamsa. And just to make things even more exciting, Balaram, whose complexion is white like the full moon, he took dark blue pulps and fragrances and put it all over his body. So the contrast was really, really extraordinary. He looked like the full moon with many spots. And then all the cowherd boys, they were just laughing. For them, everything was fun. That's a gopa. A gopa, whether Krishna's with Agasura or Bakasura or Keshi or Aristasura, or whether he's wrestling with them or playing with them or herding the cows, everything's just fun. Hasya ras. The main characteristic of the gopas is they're always laughing. Krishna makes them laugh. And they're one of their most prominent services is they make Krishna and Balaram laugh. That's their service. Out of love, they say jokes. And if Balaram and Krishna laugh, that's the ultimate perfection of their life. And Krishna reciprocates by telling them jokes, and they laugh. And they're just laughing and joking and laughing, and not only joking in words, but in everything they do, they're making each other laugh. It's just fun. This is the origin of fun. People like to have fun. It's because it's our innate nature to have fun with Krishna. It's not that Krishna takes the role in material existence as a very stoic, upholder of religious principles, punishing the wicked and rewarding the pious. But beyond that, he just gives fun to his devotees. And this is the cowherd boys. So they're watching Krishna and Kubja. And they're anointing all of their bodies, and they're really having fun doing it. And it smells so nice. And why does it smell so nice? It's not the same fragrance that Kamsa smells, even though it's the same ointments. Kamsa was extremely attached to Kubja's, how she would prepare these oils and fragrances for him, because he enjoyed the smell. But Krishna and Balaram, they're enjoying the spirit of love and surrender
that's within those oils. Not just, Kamsa was only enjoying the material ingredients. But Krishna, just how fearless she was to please Krishna. How passionate she was to make him happy. That's the fragrance that Krishna and Balaram. Her surrender, her love, please understand this, they were covering their whole bodies with it. This is extraordinary. That love of Kaukubjam, Krishna, Balaram, and all their friends, Krishna covered his whole body with it, smeared it. And he wanted to share it and covered his friends' bodies with it. This is bhakti. Krishna loves to receive the love of his devotees. And he also wants to share the love of his devotees with others. Just like that lady from the forest brought those fruits to Krishna and gave them to him out of love, out of surrender. She had nothing. And she gave everything she had to Krishna, expecting nothing in return, because she just wanted to make him happy. And then what did Krishna do? He took all those fruits and started, had Mother Yashoda give them to all the Vrijavasis. He wanted to share the love of this lady with everyone, because he was tasting it so sweetly. Let everyone enjoy the love of my devotee. That's bhakti. What we receive, we want to share, because it's not ours. When we receive something and we share that, that's when Krishna is most pleased, and that's the happiness of the soul. As Krishna was enjoying, the acharyas tell us the identity of Trivakra, Kubja. She was an expansion of Satyabhama, Krishna's consort. Especially she was the personification of Bhudevi, the supreme goddess of fortune who manifests as Mother Earth. And when Mother Earth at one time took the role of a cow and went with the demigods to the ocean of milk, she was praying to Krishna to appear on earth because she was being burdened by the overloading atrocities of wicked, greedy, envious people who were exploiting her and exploiting her children. People like Kamsa and Jarasandha and all of these. The earth was being exploited. The burden. So in the same way as Kamsa was doing that to the earth planet, personifying the earth planet, that's why she was a hunchback. She was being exploited by Kamsa. And the quality of the earth, that's its special significance, is its fragrance. Krishna says, a fragrance, I am the earth. Of the five material elements, the ether or space, its quality is sound. The air, the quality of air is touch. The quality of fire is light, sight. The quality of water is taste. And the quality of the earth is fragrance. So here is Mother Earth in a very, very exploited situation, bent down and disfigured due to that exploitation, is giving the very essence of the best she has, her fragrances. So Krishna, being the supreme environmentalist, who doesn't like to see Mother Earth being exploited, and also
Bhaktaram Jagat Sapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Exploited on so many levels by calling the resources of Mother Earth. She's doing everything for her, everything that she provides is an offering to Krishna and an opportunity for all of her children to share that offering of love with her to Krishna. But when we exploit and take and start hurting each other and having wars with each other and greed with each other and hating each other and envying each other and competing with each other in egoistic ways, that cripples the heart of Mother Earth. For those of you who are parents, do you want children like that who are dealing with each other in such egoistic ways? It's painful. So Krishna was so pleased because she gave the best she had, fearlessly. He looked at Krishna and Balaram and his friends and made them laugh. And he smiled at Kupcha and then did something wonderful. He placed his toes on her toes with his feet covering her toes. Then he took one finger from each of her hand, of his hands, and placed it under her chin. And with a lovely smile, he very gracefully just pulled up. And miraculously, her back became completely straight. All her limbs were exquisite before they were deformed. And she became absolutely, indescribably, incredibly beautiful. And by Krishna's will, he awakened within her heart madhurya ras, conjugal love, similar to that of the gopis. She wanted to give her heart, her life, her body, her mind, her words, everything for Krishna's pleasure. She was totally in love with Krishna. And Krishna was totally in love with her. And see, with her hand, she snatched Krishna's upper cloth and started pulling it. And she said, please come to my home. Krishna looked at Balaram. She actually asked Krishna to come to her home with Balaram too. So Krishna looked at Balaram and looked at the cowherd boys. And the way he looked at them, he made them all laugh. She was very serious, but he made it all so everyone would laugh. And he told her that, of course, your home is a shelter for homeless wanderers like me and my friends. He said, after I take care of the duties I have come to Mathura for, I will certainly come to your home. But she was pulling him. And she said, I cannot bear not being with you. You have completely conquered my heart. I cannot bear that I will not be with you. But Krishna assured her. Now, from another perspective, even though Kubja was very crooked and was in a very, very unfortunate, pitiful condition physically, Krishna saw the potential in her. Krishna didn't see her as a hunchback. Krishna saw her as the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful person, inward and outward. And because he saw that potential in her, he actually gave her the realization of her potential. She was very humble. Because obviously, you know, people didn't like to look at her, they didn't like to see her, people probably ridiculed her, spoke very disdained about her. Even Kamsa didn't like anything about her except the oils. He would compliment the oils, but he would never say anything good about her, anything else. But that's a very lamentable situation she was in. But Krishna saw her potential. And because he saw the potential, by his mercy, he actually manifested her potential. And actually Krishna sees the beauty and the potential in every living being. That's our hope. Emotionally, mentally, physically, whatever it may be, we all have our crookedness. Yes? Nityananda Prabhu saw the potential in Jagai and Madai. Hanuman saw the potential in Ravana. Of course, Ravana wasn't very cooperative. But this is Krishna's vision. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. He descends to this world where there's so much crookedness, and he sees that spiritual potential within everyone. When Srila Prabhupada came to New York City and San Francisco, read in some of his purports and hear in some of his lectures, these people that were coming, they were really like kupchas. Very crooked. Taking all sorts of intoxications, having all sorts of illicit relationships with other humans of all different varieties. And it's not that these people were all, you know, just seekers of the truth. Many of them were really, really in a pitiful condition, very crooked. And Prabhupada said, and they never even took baths. Yes? In other words, they weren't like Kubja with nice fragrances. And these people who never bathed would fill this little tiny storefront. And Prabhupada was there chanting, and he was seeing the potential in everyone. And Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of Krishna, when he was on Jaladuta, he didn't say, I will do this. He will say, Krishna, I am your representative. Through me, let us make these people happy. And through satsang, through harikata, through seva, through japa, through harikirtan, Krishna, through Prabhupada, was straightening us up, making us beautiful. Even Srila Prabhupada would say, now they are bright-faced. They were so disturbed and so much anxiety, now they have bright faces. Mainly it was a state of heart. So this is what a Vaishnav is. That we see the potential in each other. Anybody could look at a kupja and say, look at that ugly hunchback with deformed limbs. Anyone could say. But the false ego makes it seem like we're really heroic, like we're really learned, we're really advanced because I have the power
to condemn other people's faults, to criticize.
And that's how material energy works. She gives us a certain satisfaction and a certain prestige. And we see this is prajalpa at its worst. There's different levels of prajalpa. Prajalpa means unnecessary talking. One is just to talk whimsically, frivolous things. But the worst is when we're looking and speaking about the faults of others. Why? Because it gives me some morbid sense of value. That if I can judge another's faults, that gives me some esteemed position. That gives me a superior role. So this tendency is very strong. Rupa Goswami tells that the nature of a true devotee is the propensity to find faults with others no longer exists within the heart. So a Vaishnav, a true bhakta, is one who sees the potential even where there is the hunchback and the deformations. And unless great souls see that potential in us, we have no capacity or hope to actually be straightened up and restored. Srila Prabhupada was asked, what was our qualification for getting such a treasure house of knowledge and realization? Srila Prabhupada said, you had no qualification. I made your qualifications. So what was Kupcha's qualification? Kupcha's qualification is that Krishna saw her potential. And Krishna approached her and gave her the opportunity to serve. Srila Prabhupada came to us and gave us the opportunity to serve because he saw that ultimately, essentially, we're all pure. We're all perfect. We're all children of God. Whatever hunches were on our backs or deformities were there in our character, whatever our karma had created, he saw that we were perfect devotees in our core. And he straightened us up. And this is how we are supposed to deal with each other. In the community of the devotees is, yes, there are people with faults. There are people with shortcomings. There are people with mistakes. There are people that step on each other's heads sometimes, even our own head. So what? At the time of death, it's not going to mean anything to us, is it? When we're on our deathbed and we think 20 years ago you did this to me. I'm going to get you. What is that? It's nothing. We make things so significant, but all the things in this world are really quite insignificant in comparison to what our real opportunity is. So this is what a community of devotees, this is our values. We're all trying to straighten each other up. It's not that we just sentimentally let people go on with their unfavorable activities. But we see the potential in each other and we're all trying to help each other to let Krishna, through our gurus, lift us up and make us whole and natural again. So we can see everyone is like a kubja. With such a potential. The potential to be a beautiful lover of Krishna. Just has to be brought out.
is restored.
And Krishna's two fingers and his lotus feet, the way he did that with Kubja, he's giving us the same opportunity. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. He's giving us the opportunity to become restored to our natural, beautiful, perfect, loving condition through the chanting of the holy name. And as soon as Kubja was straight by the grace of Krishna, what happened? As soon as that happened, ecstatic, infinite, madhurya ras, conjugal love awakened in her heart. Similarly, as we become purified and come back to our natural condition, that natural love of ecstatic love for Krishna, intimate experience we're always hungry for, prema bhakti, awakens within our heart. And Krishna told Kubja, I will come. Let me just take care of some things. When Krishna met gopis and Sri Radha and Kurukshetra, they were, please come home again to Vrindavan. This is your home. It's our home. And he said, yes, I will come, but I still have, you know, 8 or 10 more asuras that I have to do, that I have to deal with. Then I will come, I promise. So more or less he's saying the same thing to Kubja. I will come to your home and get the shelter of your home and your love. But let me just take care of Kamsa. And Krishna did come. But that comes later in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So after giving this incredible lesson to the whole creation for all time to come, and teaching us this wisdom through Kubja, to see the potential in everyone, to restore the qualities of Mother Earth, to restore the qualities of all Mother Earth's children. Prabhupada would see everyone as a pure devotee of Krishna who have just need to be straightened out. And that's the way he wanted us to see each other. And that's the way he wanted as a community for us to see the whole world. And that's why we have these temples and these farm communities and these hospitals and these schools and whatever else projects we're doing. That's how we're trying to live within our own homes in this spirit. That we have a community, we have a family, and together we want to see that potential in everyone and awaken it on behalf of Krishna. When the people of Mathura saw this, they were astounded. And Kubja was very happy. She attained the ultimate perfection. The different shopkeepers were running to Krishna, offering him everything they had. This is what Mathura became. And Shukadeva Goswami tells the gopis' prediction actually was fulfilled. When Krishna was leaving Vrindavan with Akrura, the gopis, in their separation, they were feeling, now Krishna's leaving us, we will have broken hearts, but how fortunate are the people of Mathura. He will capture their hearts, he will reciprocate with their love, and they will be so happy. And the gopis' prediction was now manifesting, and Shukadeva Goswami was so
joyful as he was explaining. This is the gopis' wisdom, because they had tasted it to the fullest, and they understood what it means when somebody else could taste it.
To the degree we taste the sweetness of bhakti, we understand the happiness it could give others. And we become that much enthusiastic and determined to share it with others. From a realized platform, that's the spirit of compassion. If people have everything else and anything else but don't have that, we cry for them. Because we know what it is, and we know what all this other stuff is. It's so cheap, and it's so shallow. Any type of material enjoyment or acquisition. We can't really understand how cheap and shallow materialistic pleasures are until we actually, it's theoretical. And it's realized to the extent that we suffer. But we don't really understand how shallow it is until we taste the fullness, the richness of pleasing Krishna. The gopis were feeling so happy for the people of Mathura because they knew what they were getting when Krishna came. And sure enough, the people were running to Krishna. Please take this cloth. Please take this flower. Please take this pot. And Krishna was accepting and sharing with his friends. And in this way, he was winning the hearts of all the people of Mathura. And then he went to the bow, Kamsa's own worshipable bow that was on an altar. And Kamsa had that bow guarded by his most powerful soldiers so that nobody could get near it. Then Krishna, he asked some people, where's the bow? And with his friends, Balaram and his friends, they went into the arena where the bow was on this big altar, huge bow. And the soldiers would not let anyone close. And Krishna just pushed them away. This little cowherd boy just push. And he went right up to the bow, and the guards were thinking, Kamsa's going to kill us. We are letting this little boy near the bow. And Krishna was just pushing him away. And within a second, he really wanted to create, he was reciprocating with Kamsa. Because Kamsa really feared Krishna. So Krishna, you want to, if you're fearing me, well, I'm going to reciprocate and make you really fear me. So right in front of everybody, Krishna just, within a second, picked up the bow. Nobody could pick up this bow. He just lifted it up, and within another second, he pulled a string and cracked the bow in half. It made such a thunderous sound that covered the whole earth and the sky. Kamsa heard it. Right? He's waiting for his fragrances. And Krishna and Balaram put the opposite color fragrances on their body so it contrasts. So everyone in Mathura is talking about how Kamsa's fragrances are decorating the whole bodies of Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys. He's getting that news, and then he hears the bow break. He was terrified. So much fear struck his heart. But still, he was determined to kill Krishna. All he had to do was say, okay, Krishna, you win, I'm yours. And he would have been one of Krishna's best friends. But he just wouldn't give up.
You know, how much Krishna is crushing us in so many situations. Why don't we just say, Krishna, I'm yours? Just won't let go of our egos. Kamsa just wouldn't let go. And then Krishna and Balaram, just to make things even more dramatic, they were carrying around the two halves of Kamsa's worshipable bow. Yes? They just had him over their shoulders. They had all of his fragrances, they had his bow broken, and just took it as their own. They took everything as their own. And then when the soldiers came to attack Krishna, because in Balaram they were so angry, Krishna could have done it anyway, but very symbolically, very philosophically, very systematically, he liberated all of the soldiers, both Krishna and Balaram, by hitting them with Kamsa's bow. So sweet. This is Krishna and Balaram. And then after doing all those things, they didn't stay in Mathura. They were invited to Kupcha's house, they were invited to Akrura's house. Krishna and Balaram go back to where Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they made a little settlement with ox carts and wagons in a circle. You know, that's the way they would do. They would make a little circle, and then they go in the circle and they would live. Just in the ground, in the outskirts, kind of a little forest pasture area, Krishna went and there stayed with his family overnight. And they were so happy because they had such a fun date. And the gopas were just praising all what Krishna was doing. And Yashodamai sent this best, most precious milk of her love from the best of the cows of Vrindavan in little pots. And they made some rice and sprinkled it. And then Krishna and Balaram just very happily ate their bhoga with their friends. And then immediately just went to sleep. That's Krishna. The next day is the actual wrestling match. The next day is Krishna's, the first time in his life where he's going to see Kamsa face to face. And it's the first time in Kamsa's life that he's going to see Krishna face to face. And Kamsa already had Kuvalayapita, this elephant, ready. This elephant was so powerful. And he had soldiers. And he had the... You know, in our society today, we have world champion wrestlers.
Yes.
And sometimes they say Mr. Universe and all this. It's all just hype. But Chanur and Mustika, they were actually world champion wrestlers. You know, if these wrestlers, world champion, and every country has their own world champion. You know, in America there's the world champion, and in England there's the world champion, and in India there's the world champion, and in China there's a world champion, or whatever. What do you do? But Chanura Mustika, the world, if all the world champion boxers and wrestlers and kung fu artists and all these people who do all these martial arts, if all of them came together to fight against Chanura or Mustika with the little finger of their left hand, they could crush them all within seconds. Because they were not humans. They were mystics. They had attained their wrestling powers through yogic cities. Can you imagine that? They could change their forms.
They could crush anything. Annihilate. They were highly trained to kill. And they were gigantic, like mountains. And every part of their body was like a mountain. And they're just waiting to wrestle little Krishna and Balaram, who are just little boys with tender limbs. So this is what is coming the next morning.
Kuvalayapida, the soldiers, General Mustika, and ultimately Kamsa, all determined to kill Krishna.
And Krishna eats his rice and milk and then goes to sleep.
And Balaram
goes to sleep. Immediately. Sound asleep. And Nanda Maharaj, he's so worried. He knows what's coming the next day. He doesn't know exactly what's coming, but he knows these wrestlers and Kamsa's going to be there. And he says to Krishna, Krishna, why are you so mischievous? Why are you so naughty? That bow was the symbol of Kamsa's pride and prestige. That was his most worshipable object in his whole kingdom. Why did you go in there and break Kamsa's bow? Kamsa is the king. We pay our taxes to him out of fear, not out of love, out of fear. Why did you do that, Krishna? You're so restless. Krishna smiled and laughed, and his friends laughed, and they went to sleep. But Nanda Maharaj could not sleep all night. He was worrying.
And then the next morning, when the sun rose, Krishna and Balaram and his
Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men had special seats given by Kamsa in the wrestling arena. And everyone was there. Chanura, Mustaka, Kamsa was on his asana, his throne, the imperial throne. And Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's so naughty. He's not even here. He's really aggravating Kamsa. He's late. For Krishna, he was just knew exactly, intricately how to upset Kamsa. He thinks he's the ruler and the controller and the lord of all. He surveys Kamsa, and Krishna's late. And everyone in Mathura is waiting, waiting, waiting. And then Krishna Balaram come in. And they're holding the tusks of Kuvalayapida on their shoulders. And Chanura and Mustika, they're standing in the arena. And the people of Mathura are seeing the difference between the mountainous Chanura, whose limbs and muscles were not only enormous, not only full of strength and incredible speed, but they were like lightning bolts. When we compare the strength of somebody to a lightning bolt, it's an amazing analogy. Because what is faster than a lightning bolt? Not only is it powerful, but it's so swift. You know, lightning bolt, it appears, it's not even a second. Can you time a lightning bolt? You've seen it just flashes, like it's here and it's gone. And what's the damage it does in that flash of a fraction of a second? It could literally, if it hits a mountain, it could break the mountain in half. It could destroy the best of all buildings. The power of a lightning bolt. The amount of electrical energy in one lightning bolt surpasses practically years of the voltage in watts that we do in our little
electrical plants. It's unbelievable.
So Chanura and Mustika, they were like lightning bolts.
They had such supernatural power and such speed.
And Chanura, being the obedient servant of Kamsa, he tells Krishna and Balaram, when Chanura Mustika, they say, "You have come for this wrestling match. This is for the pleasure of Kamsa. And by giving pleasure to the king, all good fortune will come upon us. So now, let us wrestle." They were challenging. And Krishna said, "Yes, for the pleasure of Kamsa we will wrestle." They meant it, but it wasn't the kind of pleasure that Kamsa was expecting. And after speaking words to each other, they grabbed each other's hands, and we come to today's verse. Each fighter contended with his opponent by dragging him about in circles, shoving and crushing him, throwing him down, and running before and behind him. And we will continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.